Hi everyone, welcome. Welcome to our October support call. Couple of things I wanted to share with you and for anyone who is watching the recording. I want to sort of change up how we do these calls a little bit. Partly because some of you might know, I'm currently in a program that will see me achieve a diploma in supervision through the Association of Coaching. And it's really just making me think about how I can best support you, how we can do this more, perhaps just play with some ideas. So even if you're not bringing a case, that you get something useful out of this process. I've got this book that was recommended to me, 101 Coaching Supervision Techniques. So I thought what I might do is like choose something from there, and it just based on how I'm feeling that day. And we can do that as a group just to kind of open. And then if you have a case, we can kind of make time for that. But it just means that first sort of 20 minutes as we're all kind of warming up, we get to do a little bit of self-reflection and sharing, and then we can move into cases. So we're going to trial it out today. We're going to give it a go, and we'll see what happens, if that's okay with you guys. Brilliant. Thank you. Okay, so the exercise I've got is about metaphors. Oh, here's Joe joining us. Amazing. So the exercise I've got for us to try out is about using metaphors, which I personally kind of gravitate towards. Joe, I'm just introducing a little exercise for us to do to open. You've just arrived at the perfect time. And it's about using metaphors to explore you at your best as a coach. So it comes from a kind of positive psychology bent, which is all about, it kind of does what it says on the tin, right? It's about playing to our strengths and values, and has a really lovely coherence with lots of the kinds of coaching that we do. So I wanted to just ask you one question and to give you a couple of minutes to reflect on the question, and then we'll do a little bit of sharing and then we'll move into cases, okay? So the question is, when you are coaching at your best, it's like what? Just see what bubbles up for you, and I'll give you a couple of minutes to ponder. Okay, everyone. I just want to invite you back. I wonder if anyone wants to share anything about what came up for you. When you're coaching at your best, it's like what for you? Who wants to share?
I don't mind sharing.
No, probably I do.
Say something first.
Yeah.
My metaphors, are the two that I came up with, were both water related, and they're kind of similar. But I was thinking along the lines of it's like gently throwing a pebble in a pond and watching the ripples, because I see that in my client, the way the space, the questions, the time to think and feel takes them further away for a while and then brings them back in. So similar metaphor around watching the tide recede and then come back in, but this time creeping further up the shore. And I think I feel those two things in myself as well as coach. So it felt quite coach and coachy connected.
Beautiful. What, I wonder what that gives you, just to know that's what that feels like.
It gives me the tingles, actually. I know Sarah's helped me a lot with the kind of bodily sensations, and they're full on when I'm saying that. They're right the way across my chest. So yeah, it's not a cognitive thought. It's definitely a sensation.
Beautiful. Gosh, that's fun. One question, and that comes up. Isn't that cool?
This morning, so thank you for that.
You're so welcome. Yeah, brilliant. Thank you for sharing. Does anyone else want to share what came up?
Weirdly, I had some of the words that Jo had. I hadn't got the metaphor quite as well developed. I got that our connection becomes fluid and flowing, and there's ripples. It feels like magic. Yeah, spooky. Happy Halloween.
That's brilliant. So it feels like magic, and it's flowy, and I missed the first bit that you said, sorry.
Fluid. There's a fluidity to it. So it flows, and then you see the ripples and the connections. Yeah. I can get quite to, I like the idea of the wave, Jo. That was a much more elegant way of saying it.
That's beautiful. I wonder what that gives you, Sarah, just to have that.
It's not tingles for me. It's like a swelling. It's like a swelling in my chest of like, oh, I can breathe. There's like a magic there.
Yeah. So nice. I love how that just that one question like opens us up to something that's a little bit, yeah, it is a bit magic, isn't it? I think it gives us access to something that's beyond, I'm here because it's my mission. Although that can come up too, and that's great. But I think sometimes the metaphor opens us up to something that's a little bit bigger. Yeah, beautiful. If you want to know something that is truly spooky, the example that's given in the book is also related to water. So the metaphor, the supervisee says, when I'm at my best, it's like I'm in flow, like a meandering river. And I'm curious about what the client brings. How cool is that?
What's the book, Sass?
It is 101 Coaching Supervision Techniques, Approaches, Inquiries, and Experiments, which was recommended to me by my trainer. And I just thought I'll start using that at the beginning of these calls for us to do a little warm-up. So, yeah, thank you so much, both, for sharing that. Isn't that cool? It's a nice one. And I think when I was doing this, I just sort of flipped it open and did it myself, and I thought, oh yeah, that feels quite nice. And I thought, what a great, like a bodily state, an emotional and bodily state to kind of get into before a session. Like when I'm coaching at my best, this is what that feels like for me. And it's almost like setting an intention, but doing it at a kind of more richer level, I guess. So that's one of the suggestions for how you could kind of work with that. Once you find a metaphor that suits you, is to sort of allow yourself to be in that state as you're waiting for people to join your Zoom. Really cool. Fun. Thanks for playing, guys. I hope that was fun and helpful. So has anyone got a case that they want to bring, either a client that they've got some stuff they want to talk through, or could be related to business stuff, or it could be about you as a fabulous human? Who wants to go first? Oh, we just have a really short call.
Okay, I'll give you one. Okay. I suggested to a client who, so we've been working together for quite a while, around three different areas for her, looking at how she gets more visible, both within the job that she's in and the business that she's setting up. The second area is about the business that she's setting up. But occasionally we touch back in the leadership role that she's got with the organization that she's with. So we kind of dance around three objectives. And she came up with a really strong memory about a school teacher telling her she was a liar. And this really was like a big, like visibly noticeable reaction. But we, you know, we had to take a pause. She got a little bit upset about it. She couldn't recall what she was a liar about. And she couldn't find the meaning in it. So yeah, I'm just curious, Sass, what would you have done? I know what I did, but I'm just kidding, because it's like, I kind of went, which tool is helpful here? What shall I get her to do? Other than, you know, hold the space and make her feel safe and let her just experience it, knowing that she could and it would be okay.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, what would you have done?
So a question I have for you is, was there a context that this came up in?
She has a current colleague who she finds, and she's now beginning to see it's a story she's making true, that she finds quite snooty and looks down on her and sort of questions female leadership, right? Questions where my client's coming from.
Right.
So it's like the school teacher that said I was a liar. He's calling me a liar about my opinion.
Right. Right. So your client, if I'm hearing this right, your client was making that connection, this manager at work and the school teacher, I'm having a similar response to both of them, and it activated that memory for her.
Yeah. What I'm hearing is he's calling me a liar that my opinions aren't true.
Right. Right. And so as you just talk about it now, kind of out of the muck and bullets of the session, I wonder what comes up for you around how you could approach that. I'm so happy to share my ideas as well, but I'm just wondering what comes up for you.
So I can tell you what we did. We held the space and we just like, what else, you know, what else is there for you? And she's like, no, I don't have a lot of memories of my childhood. I've blocked a lot of it out. And it's like, okay, is that something you want to explore?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. Okay. So it's a bit of a fishing trip, really.
Sure.
Kind of like, okay, what are you, you know, we didn't have masses of time left in the session.
Yeah.
I didn't really want to kind of go, let's take the lid off all of that and
take
place.
Yeah.
So yeah, a bit of a fishing trip around. What's there for you? Do you want to look at it? Do you want to step out of it? Do we want to shake it out? What's going to feel good? So lots of very staccato yes and no responses.
Right.
Lots of big pauses.
Yeah.
And we worked our way through it, and then she went, actually, I think I do need to look at this. And I'm like, okay, so tell me more. And she was like, I can think of other times where I thought people thought I was lying. And that's actually one of the reasons why I don't want to be visible.
Right.
Because people are putting their pants on fire. I think it was her line.
Yeah. Yeah.
I stand up and I start talking about the business, and her business idea is so beautiful and solid. It's untrue. If she starts talking about it, somebody will call her out and go, you know, you don't know anything about that. You're a liar. So it was a really good, like, aha for her, but really super painful and uncomfortable. So we eventually agreed. She said she wanted to explore it. And I said, well, what do you want to do between now and our next session? And she's like, I just want to journal about it. So she did that. That gave her a few more insights. And then I offered the life map and said, can you look at like where has this happened before, and what was the context and what was going on and what's the extra meanings?
Yeah.
And she came up with like two sessions on going, I really hate you, with a big smile going, I really hate you. I really hated doing that. And I only did it yesterday because I've put it off, but I've done it. And it was really helpful. But I hate you for making me do it. So it worked out really well, but I'm curious, is there another approach from kind of a self-belief perspective that could be more helpful or more got her there more quickly and more easily, or I don't know.
Sure. So something that I just want to like reflect back, like it sounds like this client felt really safe with you to be able to share this quite poignant memory. If she has blocked out quite a lot of her childhood, then we can assume that this one is like sticking up with a big red flag on it, right? So that she felt really safe enough to be able to share this with you. I think that's a really amazing sign that there is really solid trust and rapport between you.
Mm.
And it sounds like you've gone right to the heart of, of some of her trepidation about being visible, right? You've really got to that kind of one of those core root causes of what's created that. So I guess what I'm thinking about is I would just be saying, oh gosh, doesn't it make total sense that you would feel this, you know, this trepidation about being visible when in the past you have been made visible in ways that felt really uncomfortable for you, right? So it's almost like affirming that her fear and her sense of risk around visibility makes complete sense. And I guess I just point that out because I think a lot of clients will get that intellectually. Like I'm probably not going to be burnt at the stake if I post on Instagram. Right? Nothing bad is probably going to happen, blah, blah. But that kind of unconscious desire to stay safe is really, really strong. Mm-hmm. It creates all kinds of resistance for us. So I think just really affirming this makes sense. You're not mad to think this. You know, it would have been really profound at that young age. And I guess one of the other approaches I would be taking is looking at how much more resourced she is now in comparison to when she was the age that this event occurred. And, you know, kind of how could she take, what did she need to hear at that time? Like, can she kind of hold those two parts, that younger part that's the memory and the healthy adult self, can you invite her to have a sort of conversation with them by just saying, you know, what would you have wanted to hear at that time, so that she can kind of take care of that part of her.
Nice.
And I think sometimes that kind of approach where you get the current most experienced, resourced person that's in front of you to speak to an older part, what you do is set up a dialogue that she can be having with herself in moments when she might be feeling a bit vulnerable.
So you
give her a kind of like a role play almost. So what, you know, when she's sort of fumbling for the words or whatever, it's like, oh yeah, it sounds like you wish someone had said, oh, that was a bit mean of the teacher, right? That's not very helpful. Like even if you had lied as a kid, kids lie, but for that to feel that way feels kind of unfair, right? It would have been nice if another grown-up had stepped in and took care of you at that moment. And then it's like, and what do you want to take from that conversation into your life now? Right? How can you be the grown-up and step in.
Yeah. Thank you.
How does that land for you, Sarah?
Yeah, she's done some inner dialogue work. So she talks about little her. Yeah. So yeah, that did we, I don't think I had that conversation as eloquently as you've just explained it. But she did talk about, yeah, there is a piece of, she recognises that there's a piece of her childhood that was unfortunately really uncomfortable and she felt very excluded.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the idea of, she's way further resourced than she was then, you're right. That, yeah, having that, so when the doubt pops up again, she can have the conversation again with herself, yeah. Remind herself that she's fully resourced. She's not that little girl anymore.
Well, and I think as well, like that this happened again and again, right? Like it sounds like she had those kinds of conversations with people or people told her that feedback. What I think can happen is it's almost like, and there's some cool stuff in gestalt therapy about this kind of thing, where we try to close a loop that feels open and vulnerable. So sometimes what we'll do is put ourselves in situations where we repeat something to try and heal it or fix it or make it better. So she may well have, you know, in her childhood just kind of tried to fix that thing of, you know, if I'm a liar, does that mean that I get rejected? You know, how can I test that loop out kind of thing? Sometimes that can happen. So it may be that either she was trying to do that by having those repeated instances, or it could also have been that she'd decided, okay, that's who I am. He's right. I'm going to believe that I am a liar. And so every time she has any feedback that's remotely connected to that feeling, it's like, oh, it's more evidence that this is true about me. So I think just knowing that can sometimes be helpful in terms of, you know, are you a liar though? You know, is it maybe that's just not true.
We did do a little bit of polarity work.
Yeah.
Was it okay for her to be both truthful and honest? And she did some going out telling micro lies. So they were not malicious and they were not hurtful, but she went out and told some little micro lies just to see what happened in the world, which actually she had great fun with.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? But lying is actually a really, it's quite a sophisticated thing to be able to do. Like there is it is associated with all kinds of quite negative traits, but it requires some imagination and some charisma. And there are actually some really awesome skills that are required, right, when we are lying successfully, right? So it can even be like to have some fun with that, you know? But I think my sense is that it's really about the rupture between her and her colleague at the moment that is kind of bleeding into this visibility, vulnerability. So it might be that she needs some support just to have that conversation with her manager.
So it's a peer and she's actually...
Oh, a peer, sorry.
She's gone to their manager and said, I think he needs a coach. Right. He's now getting a coach.
Yeah.
And I've been able to suggest a coach that I think will take on, it's not right for me to do it. I'm too close to the whole situation, but I'm going to say, could you suggest my friend?
Nice.
That would be a really good match. I think there's a story on both sides to this one. I don't think it's not my meaning making. There's definitely some behavioural weirdness with this chap.
Yeah.
That's how she's tackled it at work. She didn't want to tackle him.
Yeah, perfect.
She's gone around and so we'll wait and see what happens for this chap. I'm hoping good stuff.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, really, it sounds like a really fun client to be working with.
Yeah
really cool. Awesome. Thanks. Does that help you, Sarah?
Yeah, that's really helpful. Really interesting. Thank you.
Cool. Great. Thank you for sharing.
Pleasure.
Anyone else got anything they want to bring up? Yeah, Rowena.
Hey, so how to put this? So I'm finding, and I wonder if this is a kind of new to coaching thing, but I'm finding when I'm coaching with clients that there's a point in the call about halfway along where I start to think, oh, I hope we get somewhere. And there's this kind of like, it's, I wouldn't quite call it panic, but it's on the way, you know, that, and where I'm just really conscious that yeah, that the session's useful, right? And that we haven't just had a chat about stuff and things and then it's ended. And I wonder, and I'm sort of part concentrating on the coaching call and part trying to say, chill, it's going to be fine, trust in the process. And then, you know. So I was just wondering if there's any kind of tips to sort of quieten that aspect of it. And I suppose in the cold light of day, I know that, you know, do trust in the process. It's good. No matter, you know, whether they have a breakthrough moment or not, but it's in the moment, I think. Whether you have any advice on that.
Yeah, I love this. I mean, who among us has not had that moment? I don't think it's related to time served.
Okay, that's good.
I'm curious to know, Rowena, how you go about contracting at the beginning of a session.
Oh, that's a good question. When you say contracting, what do you mean?
Yeah, so contracting is how we know what we're talking about in the session.
Okay. So it depends on the client. Generally, it's I will have beforehand looked at our last session, and I'll kind of pull out where we left it and some of the main things we covered, and then I'll open with a how you doing, you know, what's you know, give me a download kind of thing about where you're at the moment. And then from that download and what we've spoken about before, I generally have a sort of couple of options that I've got in my mind, and I think, and I'll say, how about we do this, and then we go from there.
Yeah, cool.
It, you know, this or this or this, you know, not
Sure,
just this.
sure.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're doing a lot of that work. And I'm curious, like, what might it that be like for your client?
I guess it could be on a spectrum of dead useful to completely stifling.
Yeah, dead useful to completely stifling. Yeah, love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, love that. Brilliant. So one thing you could maybe experiment with is designing the session with the client at the start and kind of inviting them to take some ownership.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like you have this caretaking approach to your clients where you're getting in there and holding them really well, but to the point where they might have something else that they want to talk about, but that doesn't get a chance to get a look in. So it's that thing, isn't it, of the kind of dead, it's dead helpful actually, because I can just relax and rock up to my session. You're going to do all the work versus, oh, there was other stuff I wanted to talk about and I'm not quite sure if that gets airtime or I forget about it once I'm in the session. So I wonder how that sounds to you, like to actually have a conversation with a client at the start of each session. And it doesn't have to be a long, protracted thing, right? Lots of people get a bit caught up with contracting. But it could just be, what are we talking about today? Where do you want to get to by the end of the session? Or where do you hope to get to by the end of the session? And what what's meaningful about that for you?
Yeah.
And you can, if you have introverted clients who like to reflect beforehand rather than they would find it easy to kind of share that information spontaneously,
yeah,
you could send those questions to them the day before the session.
Okay, yeah.
And then if they can either answer them, you know, by sending the responses back, or they can answer them at the beginning of the session. But I would still just check in with them at the beginning of the session.
Yeah.
So then it means that you're just asking the questions and meeting the client where they are.
Mm-hmm.
They know they can kind of bring whatever's going on for them, and that might have changed. But it also means that over the kind of arc of your coaching relationship, you'll start to notice some themes and some things that pop up. Yeah. And it's coming from the client. So you can kind of go, oh, this is the pattern that I'm noticing, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
After three or four sessions with someone, you could say, hey, I wonder if I can also bring something to the session.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, you know, let's talk about how this is going for you. And yeah. Here's what I'm noticing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's interesting because the clients that I'm working with, well, when I coach within my pod, you know, we're still keeping that going and having blah, 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 I'm so much more chilled, you know, because I know that they know and we all know and it's going to be fine, you know. But it's when it's outside of that, that it's more kind of, yeah. So that's interesting. It's a sort of trust, isn't it, in many ways?
Well, I think you said when you were talking about this challenge at the start, I want to be able to trust in the process.
Mm.
And so just by having that clear conversation at the start where you're contracting, it's like, both know what the process even is, so you can trust in it.
Yeah, it's that sort of trying to switch off the desire to almost like make an agenda out of everything. It's like, right, by 11:07 we're going to be on point three, okay? Just kind of
And I wonder if that's the difference. Like, what do you think is the kind of qualitative difference between coaching in your pod and coaching with a client? For you, what's the difference there?
The difference, there's a few. So obviously no money exchanges hands between myself and the pod, right? There's something about I know that my fellow podders know that I'm good enough, I suppose, and trust that I've got the skill set. Whereas when I'm outside of that, it's more of a need to prove, I think. Yeah.
So the money changing hand doesn't change hands in your podders, and you don't really feel like you've anything to prove.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that makes total sense, right? I'm curious to know, is there like a kind of, like, what do you think about expectations around those two things? When you don't have anything to prove, when there's no money changing hands, talk to me about expectations.
I think there is, I almost put myself in the client's shoes in that I'd be thinking, well, you know, I'm paying for this and I kind of want to get somewhere. So can you make that happen, please?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what are the ways that you make things happen in a session?
I think by sort of having this constant track that we're getting somewhere, then, and having that kind of feeling of, you know, as I mentioned, like halfway through or whatever, thinking, crikey, or even a little bit further along than that, thinking, haven't got any gold dust here, that sort of thing.
So it sounds like you've got a really high expectation that you will be delivering for your client.
Yeah, definitely.
Which makes total sense about why you're kind of taking care of them and, you know, doing the wrap up from the last session at the beginning. They don't have a lot to do, mm-hmm. right? You know, mm-hmm. you don't require them to do very much. So I'm curious about what other ways could you help your client reach their objectives or goals or what they're coming to coaching for?
Just by listening, I suppose.
Yeah, like what's it like when someone else does all the work?
Nice. Right.
Yeah.
Much more, much less intense, I suppose.
And I'm curious, like, what's the risk if you're doing all the work? What's the risk for the client?
Perhaps that it hasn't come from. Yeah, maybe that. Well, I do feel like they all get the space and all of those kinds of things to explore. I suppose there is a risk that some things don't get uncovered that need uncovering, potentially. However, I don't feel like that's happened. I have to say, like, I feel like they do get that space, you know, particularly with all of the you know, the self-belief tools and stuff.
So one of the things you mentioned at the start was this idea of moving it from a nice chat to something where they actually get some value. Like it's more than a chat, right? It's more than
a chat.
So what's it like to kind of show up as a coach? What does that mean to you?
I suppose at the moment it's very much about finding themes and feeding back and testing out alternatives, and being the sort of diligent listener who almost hovers above what their client is describing. Mm-hmm. And trying to spot the things that seem to resonate whilst they're talking, and using those to help them move forward and get somewhere meaningful.
And so it sounds like a lot of that is about letting the client lead.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're leading, they're kind of in, they're the ones that whose agenda is served. So when you think about like just experimenting with contracting and setting that as a kind of like container for the session, my sense is that might shift something for you, like just to start doing that.
What I'd
really invite you to kind of pay attention to is your experience of the session. So you could use the soap reflection to look at what, like subjectively, what do you notice about how you're showing up? And then objectively, like what happened, you know? You start to get a bit of a sense of, where you're at, what's happening for you in these sessions. And you might start to reflect on your own patterns, right? How you're, because you'll be able to sense into, you know, am I over caretaking, am I encouraging, like getting a sort of feel in your yourself about where the line is there.
I think it's really interesting, actually, because I think I'm quite task orientated, and I think that comes through.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Well, who we are is how we coach.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Right? Like you can't kind of escape it.
Yeah. Just going to lock that task orientated monster away for a bit. Yeah. That's interesting.
It can be, well, it's that thing, right? Is it dead helpful or is it stifling?
Yeah.
For your clients, they're going to figure that out. And so part of this is about having that ability to flex.
Yeah.
Right? So if you've got a task oriented client and you're task oriented as a coach, that's probably going to feel like you're flying when you're in sessions, and you are less likely to have those moments of what's going on, what's happening, are we on track?
Yeah.
Whereas if you're with a client who's less directional, you might find that just takes a little bit more effort to flex into.
Yeah.
It's just out of your preference.
Yeah, but nice as well, right? To get the you know, light and shade or whatever. Yeah,
for sure. But I think your task-oriented tendency could be a real support to you just in that, okay, let's set a quick agenda here. You know, what are we here to talk about? Well, where do you want to get to and why does that matter to you? Mm. And it means that you kind of not train your client, but you help them to show up in a way that is supporting of the process. So you can both trust in it.
Yeah. Thank you so much. That was really useful. Massively. Yeah. Thank you.
And I would just say, like, the first couple of thousand hours of working with clients are all about this.
Okay.
One of my favorite researchers, Eric DeHaan, he talks about how coaching is basically improv with moments of doubt. That's it.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that was what I was signing up for.
Oh, right.
But yeah.
Oh, I love it. Thank you so much. That's really reassuring. So cheers.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thanks. Okay, we've probably got time for one more person. If Joe or Sarah, you have anything you want to share?
Can I go?
Yeah, of course.
So it just got me thinking that last question just got me thinking about, I am still struggling to keep any of my sessions within an hour.
Right.
Always running over.
Yeah.
And I feel like I do contract reasonably well at the beginning in terms of this, the expectations, what would you like to get out of it? Right. We have it set up. But what I struggle with is when, if we've got to something really juicy towards the end of the session and we're digging into something and I'm thinking, oh, there's something there that we might get to, is how do you come out of that, because you're now quite close to the end of the session and you need to roll it into the next in a polite way or a way that doesn't leave people quite open and raw. You know, sometimes it's nice to be able to explore it and then help them kind of understand the meaning of something. If I've kind of picked, it feels like sometimes I've kind of picked away at something that can be quite challenging for somebody and I haven't got enough time to help them process that. How, any kind of support you can give me for how I can wrap that up more effectively and roll it into the next session rather than running over, which I invariably do, to try and help give a bit more closure.
Well, you could just extend your sessions.
Okay.
So you could just go, well, we don't have an hour session, we have a 90-minute session or a two-hour session. Some people like to have longer sessions.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to give you some options, right? You could just go, let's go with it. Let's just say it's this and I'll keep 90 minutes in my head and we'll try and do it. What I notice is you're saying for lots of sessions, that's happening.
Yeah.
So it's not just like one or two clients or one or two occasions where something might happen.
Yeah.
And you're running a bit over. It sounds like that's now kind of a pattern for you.
A common theme is an hour and a half would be a much nicer session length for me. I do find it quite difficult to wrap it up in an hour. Yeah.
So you could just accept that that's how you like to work, okay, and do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
There's no rule.
Yeah.
And I think there's something about just knowing that you could spend all day talking to a person and never get to the place where you're going to wrap it up.
True. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what happens when you get to 5 minutes to the hour and you've uncovered something? What do you tend to do?
So I'll tend to give them some sort of reflective exercise so that they can work out in their own time, which is normally journaling or something that relates to what we've done. So they've got some time to process it. And then we talk about it in the next session. And most of the time that works really well. I'm mentioning it now because I had a client a couple of weeks ago where it felt like, oh, this is heavy, yeah, heavy at the end of a session.
Yeah.
And I think I dug a bit too deep, if I'm fair. Right. I probably pushed further than he was ready to go. You know, when you kind of like, yeah, I can see where we're going here.
Yeah.
This could be where you're going. And I probably went in a bit too,
right,
too much. And it probably was further than where he was ready to go.
Right.
In terms of.
And were you kind of sensing some resistance from him?
Less resistance. He was open. It was more like, I'm tired. You know, when your brain's kind of, what I was getting from him was a feeling of like, oh, this is a bit overwhelming now. So he was still very open, but right, yeah, we closed it.
Yeah.
And we did wrap up. But yeah, my reflection when I kind of felt after that session was, that was probably just a little bit further than he needed to go right now. That's a next session, or, you know, a few more sessions down the line. We can continue to work on that item. It doesn't all need to be wrapped up in this one session. This is something that's going to be a bit more time for him to keep processing and thinking about and reflecting back on before he gets that kind of moment of clarity on it, I think. Yeah.
And I guess, I think it's such a great a great sign that you kind of sensed there was something,
mm-hmm,
happening for him.
Yeah.
And so how do you feel about just naming that?
Naming what I sensed for him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose,
because I think sometimes what we'll do when someone is talking about something that has its roots in trauma or is heavy, like you say, what we'll do is kind of go, oh, I can't say anything, I don't want to interrupt the client, they're going somewhere with this, I want to let them process. And what can happen then is there's no one kind of holding it, because we're then in our heads worrying about what's going on for them. And so something you can do just to kind of bring you both back to the conversation is just say, so I'm noticing, I'm feeling really tender as you're sharing this.
Yeah.
You know, that, and that's just me, you know, because we're in the territory of mirror neurons all the time, right? So mm-hmm. we're going to sense into where our clients are. So you could say, you know, oh, I'm feeling quite tender as you say this, and I wonder how you're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not, because there's a difference here between the content of the story and the processing of it.
Yeah.
And what we'll tend to do when we feel a little bit like, oh, it's wobbly, it's going heavy, it's going into territory that we're not sure we can hold, is we'll let the content of the story lead.
Yeah.
And when you interrupt that and come back to the process of it, how is this feeling for you? What you're doing is a couple of things. You're bringing the client into the present rather than in leaving them in the memory, which can be quite difficult.
Yeah.
But you're also asking them to pay attention to how they are now and what they need right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it means that it's actually also a really good technique if you're worried about visiting trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes just for some clients, it can feel a bit like, I don't want to go there, but now it's in the room and I've got to go there. Right. And what we can say is, well, you know, listening to you talk right now, and you can interrupt. Mm-hmm. For a lot of clients, it's actually like, oh, thank Christ, I don't have to talk about this, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
And you just noticing,
you don't need to go into all the details.
The content is irrelevant.
How did it feel then? And how does that correspond with how you're feeling now? What do you recognize from that?
The content of the memory is the least important thing and the least useful thing for the client.
Yeah.
It's the more useful thing is, how is this feeling right now? And potentially, what is the impact of that event in your life at the moment? How do you notice this showing up?
Yeah.
But I think just being willing to name what's actually happening and bring the client into the room, you're giving them an out. It means that they don't feel like, oh, well, now I've started. I better tell you the whole freaking story, right? Yeah. Which can be really activating and all of that jazz. Mm-hmm. And as a coach, we don't need them to do that unless it is something that they feel would really support them. And I think if someone's bringing it up at the end of a session, unconsciously they want to kind of zip through that as fast as possible is my reading of it.
Yeah. But I think what you've just brought up for me there as well is just the recognition of it is the kind of first step. So I really wanted to dive into, okay, now you're aware of this, what was the meaning you made of that situation? Yeah. Now how could we kind of go straight into kind of belief bustery type of work? But that's when it was just like, that's too much, because I've only just realized, you know, so kind of like that would have been enough in itself.
And you could even say,
but you know, when you can start thinking, it's like, oh, once you get hold of this is going to make such a difference for you. And then it's a fixing mode, which,
And that's part of it too, right? Is your beautiful desire to give your clients value. I think this is all of us. This is our Achilles heel.
Mm.
So you could play with just not helping so much, right? Mm-hmm. You could even experiment with, look, it's 5-2. I feel like we've got to a place where you can take this away and think about it. Shall we finish early and you get 5 minutes of your day back? I mean, it's, you know, it's nothing really, but it's almost like a way of saying it's okay. We've got to a place that's helpful. What are you going to take away to play with?
Yeah.
What do you want to reflect on until the next session?
Mm-hmm.
And then you're putting the client in the seat of their own sovereignty.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah. Brilliant. Good. Really cool. I think this is such a common thing, Sarah, as well, like the time thing and the willingness to interrupt someone and say, wait, what's happening?
It is. And just reflecting on what you've said there, interrupting someone and saying, I notice that you are, you know, potentially, because it is often when people are skirting around an issue or don't want to feel something, they'll talk about it an awful lot, won't they? So sometimes saying, I notice, and bringing them into the present can be the most valuable thing, can't it? It's just sometimes feels very awkward when someone's kind of in the
depth of a big chair. That's the thing. If you've got a client who's emotionally a little bit closed, or you feel like interrupting them might be a little jarring, if you do it from your perspective, right, I notice what I'm feeling is this.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, I'm with you in this, and I wonder if that's true for you. And sometimes people will just go, yeah, that's how I'm feeling.
Mm.
Or something else.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
You're sort of helping, you know, particularly I think for folks who, like me, have operated for most of their lives from sort of neck down, you just ignore that bit. Emotions, that's something other people have, right? it's like a real practice to go, what is this feeling? Mm-hmm. I just know it's not great.
Yeah. Thank you.
So welcome. Such a great question. Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, look at that. And we're going to finish with 3 minutes to spare. Amazing. Hey, thanks so much for being here, folks, and for playing with me at the start. I hope those metaphors support you as you go through your week. And yeah, we'll see you again soon.
See you soon.
Bye, everyone. Take care.
Bye.